Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football on Macquarie Radio NTS News Talk Sport. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley. First edition news shortly with Mark Van Aken, but it's the international break, and after a nail-biting contest against Iraq, the Socceroos got the result they needed in Perth to go through what was a tricky affair than many expected and preview Wednesday's match against the UAE, the man who pulls no punches, John Cosmina. And while his team, Hume City, might be out of the FFA Cup, he's been watching all the round 16 action this week to go through that. And the A-League just 5 weeks away, our man Hume City coach Dean Hennessy. Before we wrap up the first hour with an A-League and Socceroo favourite, back with Sydney FC for what surely will be one last season, Alex Brosk. In the second hour, as always, we'll kick off with second edition news before Australian Football Hall of Famer Paul O'Conn answers our questions on just how he intends to turn around the Central Coast Mariners in what must surely be one of the most difficult jobs in Australian sport. Then Dean, I'll be back to get stuck into the rest of the Euro news to wrap up the show. Now, Edge, if I recall correctly, I said I was worried about Iraq, and you blithely dismissed my concerns. Now, but for a penalty call that should have been given to the Lions of Mesopotamia, we would have been down 1-0 at half-time.
Yeah, look, look, they got the job done. It was a 2-0 win. If Tommy Urich had had his brain connected to his left foot, he probably would have got 2 or 3
spaghetti
extra goals.
Legs, I think I heard Andy Harper refer to him as.
You might have called him that. There's one in particular which he could have nailed with his left foot. Look, Iraq, much improved team. They've got their mojo back. We always had a bit of difficulty with them over the last four or five times we've played them. So I think that's a good result.
Well, you'll remember that it took Josh Kennedy's, I think, 83rd minute goal to get us through to Brazil. And we, one thing we didn't consider last week was that I know we referred to their Olympic campaign, but the fact that they'd be coming off that Olympic campaign with a lot of those players in form and ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they're impressive, and what a return bout it's going to be when Australia plays Iraq in Tehran, in Iran. That's a lot of...
They never used to be friends, the Iraqis and the Iranians, if I recall correctly. Did they,
no,
Mark Van Aken?
No, they actually had a war for about...
I'm not going to delve into Middle Eastern politics, maybe just some football news. What do you think?
Good evening, Mark.
Good evening to you. Now, of course, I won't go too much into the Socceroos, because one, you've already touched on it, and of course, the great man, Cozzy, will be coming up after the break to delve into it in great detail. So on to some A-League news. Brisbane have boosted their attacking stocks, signing former Socceroo Brett Holman. The 32-year-old has signed a long-term deal, inverted commas, with the three-time champions and will arrive this week with his family in Bris Vegas.
I'll tell you what, that's a good effort by Brisbane Roar. With all the controversy that's going up there, I know that the people representing Brett Holman have been shopping him around to all the A-League clubs, but what an effort that is to sign him, considering all the uncertainty and conjecture around off-field stuff.
What sort of dough would he be on?
A lot of dough, you would have thought, because he's been, as Michael said, shopped around to every club, basically had no love. They presumably then went back overseas. Not a lot of love over there as well. But look, I would have no idea.
In the context of A-League, it's big.
Yeah, well, that's not a number, mate, in the context of Australian sport, because...
500, 700?
I think you're in the ballpark there. So now, look, the thing with Brett Holman, he's a much maligned figure in Australian football. He's been overseas for, I think, 14 years, playing, obviously, in Holland, in England now, most
Why
recently.
Why is he maligned?
Because he doesn't score a lot.
He did in South Africa.
He was our best player. Yeah, but hang on. I've got a line for you, because I know what you're going to say. He was our best player at the World Cup in South Africa in 2010. But the cynics out there, and I know a lot of them, as you know, Michael, would say he played about five or six decent games for the Socceroos. Happened to be three of those all in a row South Africa. But he was a superstar over there. No doubt. That was also 6 years ago.
I thought he was a very good performer leading up in that
campaign.
Well,
it would be good for Brisbane, that's for sure.
It is needed for Brisbane because, of course, as we've covered ad nauseum on this program, they are in a lot of trouble. They've lost a lot of people in the off-season. They have not adequately replaced
them. They just need some good news, and that's good.
Absolutely good news. And John Aloisi and Craig Moore up there must be ecstatic. Now, NPL Victoria side Bentley Greens will host A-League powerhouse Melbourne Victory in a mouthwatering clash in the FFA Cup quarterfinals. The fixture is one of only two intra-city clashes between teams from the A-League and the second tier, as Blacktown City host Graeme Arnold's Sydney FC after their impressive win over their rivals Bonnyrigg White Eagles in the round of 16. Massive week. Some of the other fixtures before we discuss it, boys. Melbourne City supporters will get a chance to see Tim Cahill make his home debut in their clash with Western Sydney Wanderers as well. ACT League champions Canberra Olympic will yet again host their match, this time against Arthur Pappas' Green Gully to the national colour. I notice Pappas has two P's. He's getting very upset at the moment because he's loving all the media he's getting, but they keep putting two P's in the middle of his
Oscar
name.
Oscar Wilde? Say anything you like about me, just spell my name right.
Fair enough. Hey, but Green Gully, that's a great fixture for them, isn't it? I mean, they should get over boys from the ACT.
Putting our biased Victoria hats on, which we shouldn't because we're a national program, and of course because I'm basically in business with Arthur. When that draw came out, I was actually at the social club at Melbourne Knights, and those guys got a little bit excited. And I watched the coaches, Arthur and Sean and Agim Sherifovsky, and they were smart enough to go, that's a banana skin, because it's almost like you don't want your players thinking, oh, we're playing this lowly little Canberra team.
But
if you're playing, Western Sydney or someone else, you go, well, wow, we've got to be up for this. So that's their job to get in there. What's interesting, Canberra Olympic, their keeper, who was a very decorated goal-scoring goalkeeper last week, he is a futsal roo. He's actually over at the FIFA Futsal World Cup in Colombia as we speak. Yeah. Now, depending on how far the futsal roos get into that tournament, will determine whether he comes home for that fixture.
You love your futsal, don't you?
I do. Yeah. If we played more of it in Australia, we might be decent.
But at least Green Gully will have learned from the Redlands experience when they went down to Canberra Olympic. The one I'm looking forward to is the Blacktown City Sydney FC, the Fibros versus the Silvertails.
I only wish they were playing the Wanderers, though, because Fibros versus the slightly nicer Fibros.
No, mate, Blacktown City, they're the genuine Fibros in this context. That's going to be a good game to watch. I'm looking forward to that one.
And they've been in super form. They've dominated their matches in the FFA Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Just flying under
the
radar.
Loving the FFA Cup. I would love a bit more mainstream media attention for it. But anyway, we'll gloss over it. We won't touch on, you know where I'm going to go. I'm not going to go there for you, Rob.
No, we should, actually.
Well, no, look, I'll put this in context. I woke up to sunrise on Thursday morning. I'm not going to go. And they only reported, I'm not going to go that part. It's all right, calm down. But they only reported on the Sydney FC and the Western Sydney results. And it's like, gee whiz, like there were four games last night. And to be honest, everyone I speak to is the same. Yeah, okay, we love the A-League, but it's actually the lower league clubs.
Yeah. We're the embryo of media in terms of getting the message out. Bit by bit, it'll get out there. And look, we're only third year into FFA Cup, so watch this space. I mean, as the mainstream media picks up on the great stories that exist every year, they'll start running it, and they'll be the ones that take it to the next level. That's my view.
Now, forgotten Australian defender Luke Wiltshire has rejoined Russian club Dynamo Moscow after being released by Terek Grozny. The 34-year-old right-back has joined on a free transfer and signed a deal to the end of the 2016-17 season, where Dynamo will compete in Russia's second tier after relegation last term. I've got to say, I wasn't even aware Lukey was still going around.
No, he's going around. He's got a few more stickers on his arm. So I wonder if that...
What's that mean?
Tattoos, mate. When he signed for Dynamo for the third time in his career, I just wonder whether that came with a visit or a free visit to the tattoo shop. I love him over there.
They might have just given him an oil truck.
Well, he's married to a local Muscovite. He has a family over there.
And as you well know from your recent visits, mate, they're... a few attractive young ladies over there in Russia.
I didn't notice, Rob.
Yeah, of course you did. He's not the only Wiltshire that's in the news this week as well. I know I'm just jumping into a sort of a murky area of transfer discussion, but Jack Wiltshire heading off to the Cherries.
To Bournemouth.
Yeah. Mm. How about that?
Look, it's a good move, and look, I don't want to usurp. And look, to be honest, when I'm preparing the news, I haven't touched a lot of the transfer stuff because I know Dino Hennessy will go through that in great detail. And it's very complicated. You know what's interesting too? Chelsea, guess how many players Chelsea have out on loan at the moment?
25.
38 players out on loan for Chelsea, which just is everything that is wrong with modern football.
But what's right about the Premier League is the fact that Bournemouth could see off, I think, AC Milan and Torino, who were also looking for Wilshere. And
Wilshere is now going to get past his mate in goal too at Torino. We'll get to that later.
Exactly. And if this could either be the signing of the transfer window, if it works and he fulfills his potential, because they've signed him on potential. He's never really had the career that he was expected to. He's had those highlight moments, but he's never put it all together back to back. Or it could be the dud.
Yeah, it could be. Look,
he just needs game time. Hmm. But we'll talk to Dino about that. What else you got, Mark?
Well, look, I don't want to get too far in, but new Central Coast Mariners boss, Paul Okon, who we're speaking to, of course, today.
Ray Gatt broke that story.
He did.
Box to Box's friend.
Ray Gatt also got a bit chirpy on social media about these young whippersnappers out there.
Yeah, stealing his story and not crediting it. That's
when I say whippersnappers, I've got to say, and we won't name names, but the people he was referring to, I assumed, because, you know, in this day and age, there's a lot of different sites out there and blogs and et cetera. I assumed he was talking about them. Mm. He was talking about one of the absolute major players in Australian media who are continually ripping off not just his, but other guys like Davutovic and Monteverde and really shoddy journalism where they, instead of just crediting, which I like to do in this show, I say, oh, this has come from Marco Monteverde. This has come from Dominic Bossi. They keep saying, we understand.
Yeah.
We understand. So they can pass the story off as their own.
There's a number of
and
media only reason, that deliberately do
you know who you are out there, and the only reason you understand is because real journos are out there doing your work for you.
Yeah, no, that's a fair
a bit
point.
Of editorial
and,
for you.
And hopefully they might be listening to this or they it might is. Hear the word. But credit to Ray Gatt. I think I sent out a tweet, hashtag Ray Gatt Scoop, which it was. So well done, Ray.
Scoop Gat. Over to you, Rob.
Excellent, Marco. Good stuff. Now we're going to have Johnny Cosmina next. He is the man who pulls no punches, talking Socceroos.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. A tricky World Cup qualifier in Perth, but the Socceroos got through to go through it with us. The great man, John Cosmina. Welcome to the show, John.
Morning, guys.
We enjoyed your work last night in the lab, particularly after the game, mate. You broke down a couple of key components of the game, in particular the lack of use of some of the space that was available to the Socceroos, where you know they could have got that go-ahead goal a lot earlier than they did.
Yeah, but it's also part of when a team does come back into camp. We've seen this historically that the first game, they're always a bit scratchy, which is understandable, but then by the time we get to Tuesday, things will be a lot smoother, and that's what's happened in the past, and I've got no doubt that'll happen this time around as well. But it's still, I think, for me, it gets down to the way that the team performs, and sometimes I think they are too narrow, but that's just a personal choice. Ange likes to play that way, and generally it works. But if you're going to play a tight diamond like he did last night, then you're going to get, sometimes you're just going to find it's going to be difficult to break the opposition down, but you really do need to get your fullbacks not just getting up level with the ball, but going beyond the highest line of attacking players.
Interesting that you say we were scratchy. How much should we give that to Iraq, credit to Iraq in terms of the way they organised and turned up? I personally thought they were pretty impressive.
Iraq have always been difficult to play against. If you look back over the years, the games have been really, really tight. And so they're compact defensively. They're very good athletes, which I don't think we give enough of especially the West Asian nations, credit for. So they can compete physically. And they're generally very comfortable on the ball. What you've got to remember with Iraq as well, and it's not just for this World Cup, but this is next time around as well. They're a very young side. Most of this team went to the Olympics.
Yeah, that's right.
They're going to be together for 4 or 5 years, and they're going to be a real force in a few years' time. But, yeah, you know, you've got to give them credit for the way that they set up and the way that they stayed structured and the discipline. Once that first goal went in, they lost their shape a little bit, and certainly after the second one, you can see they were a little bit more strung out. The lines weren't quite as organised and structured as they should have been. But look, they're a very good football team. You know, you can't, I guess, now put enough emphasis on how important that win was last night, because I meant to check this morning, but did the UAE get up over Japan?
They did. They beat them 2-1.
And in light of that result, that's a fantastic outcome for us last night.
Yeah, and the advantage, I guess, plays into our hands in another way, because obviously the UAE had to travel to Japan for that game, so you know they've got to travel back home in the same way that we do. So that's a just a small ace up our sleeve. But the Iraqis, you know, they did come in with a good game plan, as Edge and you indicated. Those long balls through, you know, almost caught us on a break a couple of times. You know, they were very unlucky. I mean, Brad Smith, we've chatted about this off air a couple of times. You know, didn't have one of his best shifts for the national side. Made a crazy decision to pull down one of the Iraqis in what should have been a penalty. We would have been bleating if we hadn't have been paid that penalty.
Yeah, I know. It was, you know, you don't keep your hands off of people, especially in the penalty area. I think probably there's no defence of what he did, but the referees looked at it and thought the Iraqi player wasn't actually going to get to the ball. Mm. And he's adjudged it that way. And I think the referee was pretty good. He let a lot of physical stuff go. His cards were probably warranted. But that one, yeah, we dodged a bullet that time around. Brad Smith, I think, is a... I love him as a left-back because he does get forward. He's got that little bit of bite that you need as well. He's aggressive. He's got a really sweet left foot. But he's moved to Bournemouth from Liverpool recently, and he's not playing, certainly at the top level. And I think that showed in his game last night.
I think it did too. Cozzy, you're a former legendary striker, a very experienced coach. What would you say to Tommy Urich? Because he could have had three goals last night. What do you say to a player that is that has a game like that where they could have scored more goals than they did? What would you have said to him at halftime and after the game?
Well, I think he probably should have had one in the first half, but then I look at and it was, I think, Brad Smith that rolled a ball across the face, and Tommy Urich is actually looking for a ball in defeat. As a striker, you've got to always, especially when the ball's in that front third of the pitch, you've got to be facing goal and looking at where you're going to be able to get a tap in from. Not looking for a clever little one in defeat. You go in first and look for the one across the face, then you come out and look for a cutback, or you leave the cutback for someone else filling in from behind. And that's just a mindset that Tommy's got to get into. And I guess Tommy Urich's biggest problem is that he hasn't spent enough time on the field. He doesn't have the game minutes up. Is you know, because he's spent a lot of his time in and out of teams, and he's been injured on and off over the past... Well, since he's certainly come back to Australia back in 2013.
He did concede after the game that he didn't have his mind on the job at the moment that ball came in. And as you say, that's an indication of a guy who's not getting the minutes on the
park. Well, the one where he got his feet tangled up, as a striker, you've always got to assume that the defender will miss the ball. Whether it's in the air, whether it's on the ground, it doesn't matter. You've got to assume they're going to miss the ball and get yourself set for the freebie that you're going to get from it. And he wasn't. And, you know, to admit that his mind wasn't on it, it's dumb. It, for me, it really is, because why wasn't his mind on it? It's a World Cup game. You know, his first pick as a striker for the Socceroos. You've got to be switched on. You can't turn around and say, oh, my mind wasn't on the job. What was it on then?
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully Ange might have a word in his ear about that concession. But at least he made it. And I guess admitting a problem is the first step to fixing that very problem. This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to John Cosmina about the Socceroos' defeat of Iraq and the upcoming match in Abu Dhabi this coming Wednesday against the UAE. So Cozzy, your pick of the players for Australia last night, you know, if you had to name three, who were your best?
It's a tough one. I think probably Trent Sainsbury was quite tidy at the back. He was switched on defensively even when we had possession, so he didn't get bested by anyone in the air or on the ground. I think probably you'd look at, say, Tommy Rogic, who was always getting involved in the ball. Masluongo, who for me was very busy. Aaron Moy's always there or thereabouts, but I don't think we saw all of Aaron's good qualities last night. But it would be those three or four.
And how did you think that combination in the middle of the park worked, Rogic, Moy and Luongo in particular, the three of those players?
Well, at one stage I thought Andrew was playing the old Brazilian 4-2-2-2.
So
because the way that... I think in the second half he maybe adjusted things a little bit, but... where the strikers did start to spread a bit and midfielders started going in between. That's why those goals came, because Lecky had a little bit more space. We started with a bit more width. If you look at Urich for the first ball, he knocked across. He got into an area wide and Luongo filled in. But, you know, Ange's, I think he's still toying with the narrow diamond, but Aaron Moy, for me, was sitting a little bit too deep. He was back alongside Mile Jedinek far too often, so it was almost like we were setting up with two in midfield. At the base of the midfield, and we had no real penetration on that right-hand side.
And looking forward to Wednesday night, so we we've had all the results go our way at the 57-minute mark. You know, things were looking a little bit dicey, but then, as you say, Maslow Wongo got onto the end of that ball, and you know, 6 minutes later, the game was just about done. Then we hear that Japan goes down to the UAE, which is as much of an indication of
at
the
home.
Improving strength of the UAE and the Middle Eastern teams. But what's your forecast on that one, mate?
So the UAE, I know they've got to travel back to Japan, but they're going to travel back with a lot of wind in their sails. And we've seen how good a side they can be when they were here in the Asian Cup. They've got some very clever players. They can penetrate. I mean, we wore them down in that, was it the quarterfinal we played them? Yeah, it was the quarterfinal. It was a semi, was it? Yeah, yeah, it was up at Newcastle. Yeah, we wore them down. We were just too physically strong for them. And they had probably been in a situation where they hadn't been to, you know, they'd exceeded their expectations, I believe, and weren't up for the final mentally. But I think in this case, after what they've done, it's going to be a tough game. They're at home in front of their home fans, and they're a quality side. So, but like I said, I think the Socceroos they will benefit from having the week in camp that they've had so far and from that game last night. So I think things will flow a lot smoother, but it's going to be a tough game, real tough game.
And do you think Ange might mix it up a little bit? You know, we saw players like Jackson Irvine, who's in great form in the championship with Burton Albion, scored the winner against Derby in the local derby over there. Who would have thought Burton Albion are going to beat Derby? But, you know, he's turning a few star performances in over there. You know, does he get a chance in the starting lineup? Probably.
No, I think Ange will pretty much stick with what he's got from last night. It worked quite well, and if you're trying to get a team to play with fluency, you've got to sort of start with the same lineup relatively consistently. You've got a short space of time to prepare. Those guys went through the mixer last night, so they'll be a little bit better in terms of what's required for Wednesday night. But then you don't know what happens. Who got niggles last night, and you know who's going to pull up the training. I mean, Ange has mixed and chopped and changed things before. Robbie Cruz may get a start. I don't know.
Forecast is 42 degrees while the game's on. That's the forecast.
Warm.
It is warm, yeah.
A little bit. I was looking at it last night. It was at the end of the game, it was 38 degrees in Abu Dhabi at the time, and it had this little slide rule. But I know Edge was having a bit of fun at my expense when we had the show last week, Cozzy, about the heat in England. But there's apparently a heat wave on the way to England, so our blokes might be acclimatised.
I doubt it.
Thanks, Cozzy.
No problems, guys.
Next up, Dean Hennessy talking FFA Cup and A-League.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talksport. Thanks to our very good mates at Chemist Warehouse. Now, the round of 16 has been sorted out in the FFA Cup. And it's just 5 weeks from kickoff in the 2016-17 A-League season. So the man to go through it all is our former Notts County man, 250-game veteran of the Victorian Premier League, and Hume City coach Dean Hennessy. Big week again, Dino.
Yeah, always a big week in football, and I suppose I've been in that as well. I mean, our season's come to an end, so disappointing. We lost to South Melbourne in the finals, but onwards and upwards, you know, we've got to really bridge the gap as a club to the top teams in the NPL, and you know, we're very, very similar to last season, so it's a big pre-season, trying to retain the players that we want and also bringing some new players that's going to bridge that gap. So a lot to do, and it's been a busy, busy week.
And there were some ripping games this week in the FFA Cup, mate. You would have watched them all closely. Pick the eyes out of it for us, mate.
Well, it was an entertaining evening. I watched the whole show, which obviously Fox do a fabulous
date night with Fox Sports.
It is a date night with Fox, and I thought again they did a really good service for everybody, you know, who's now committed to this FFA Cup. A lot of people talk about, you know, how significant this FFA Cup is and how much do clubs emphasise their season plans on it. And I think now it's a massive part of everybody's preparation. Everyone wants a piece of it because they can see what happens to clubs that are successful in it.
Dino, let's just have a little look at what happened. For me, obviously, the game that was went into extra time down in Tasmania was it had everything. 3,500 people, believe it or not, under umbrellas, as well as a pretty heavy pitch. And Green Gully left it until very late in the game.
Well, Bentley.
Bentley.
I spoke to Johnny A before the game, and I've spoken to him after the game. It was just a debacle with their gear. I mean, that's why you're wondering why they played in that kit.
Why did they play in that?
Well, they lost all the gear and their boots, so the players had to get new boots.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, so basically they've lost all the gear.
They did, on the plane?
On the plane. So when they land, they haven't got any gear, none of them. So
no boots as well.
So they're about to borrow a kit and they're about to get new boots.
Whose kit did they wear?
I've got no idea. I didn't go too deep into the story, but
and then they were
because when I saw them, I thought, why are they wearing that? But and it was a very strange colour as well.
So
but,
the sports shop in Devonport has no boots in it.
They saw them come in, stuck an extra knot on, thought, hey, we got a few here, so
come this way, boys.
Come this way, boys. Have I got a pair of boots for you? So
what a disaster!
It is. But look, and that's
take your boots with you on the plane. Obviously, it's the way to go.
And you've got to give credit to Bentley and to Johnny A. You know, we speak very highly of Johnny. We had him on the show last week, but he's not only a good bloke, and that's always a nice thing to be, but I think, you know, he's a very good manager. He's been successful. He's always got them at the pointy end of the season every single year. And
but Dino, it's not a very nice way to repay the hospitality of the locals.
Well, it isn't.
You know, get it out and then go and beat them.
Well, I think, you know, again, Matty Thurtell, he's a classy player. He was brought down from Brisbane. He had an ACL injury, and it was really disappointing how it happened. He just came to receive a throw-in last year at North Geelong and just set himself ready to control it, just to volley it back to the throw-in taker, and just collapsed. And he's worked so, so hard to get back. And they do use him sparingly. They're nursing him back in, but, you know, he comes on and scores the winner. But they've got some really good leaders out there. You know, Wayne Wallace, Big Wally's a good player. Jack at the back, Jack Webster, he organises that back four. And they're a good side. And it was hard conditions, but I can't remember the stats, but I think at one stage it was 34 shots to one at one stage. So I think overall, even though we couldn't see a lot of it because that wasn't the main game, I think they dominated and just made hard work of it. So, but they've got the peach draw in the next round, which is, you know, he who dares wins. And they've got victory at home, which is a fabulous draw, not only for Bentley, but for Victorian football again.
And there'll be a bit of smoke out there because the Souvlaki will well and truly be cranked up at Bentley Greens. It'll be a great night for the club and another big gate for them. And it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, great opportunity, Edge, with regards to now having victory at home. You know, when they have the FFA Cup 2 years ago, when they got to the semi and the quarter, they had 3,000 gates. The Souvlakis will be, there'll be plenty of smoke and a great atmosphere. So we're all looking forward to that.
What about Melbourne Knights and Green Gully? The match, Green Gully did it relatively comfortably. Were you surprised that Melbourne Knights didn't provide much of a...
No, not really. I mean, it's tough with the Knights. They're difficult to play against, obviously. You know, they're always strong. And they're always.
Do you think it might have been Mark Van Aken's strategic plan?
It could well be. You just don't know what foot he had in which camp, really.
Because he really does tell Arthur Pepis what to do.
He does. He does. I mean, Arthur's, you know, waiting for every breath. But anyway, I think in on a serious note, I think for Melbourne Knights, look, they'll be disappointed that they couldn't go any further. But Green Gully, look, they've been a good side. Again, the boy Boland's popped up and scored. And from all accounts, again, it wasn't the live game, so you couldn't really gauge, but it looked like they had dominated, even though they went 1-0 down.
And the TV game was Sydney FC and Perth Glory. And we're going to speak to Alex Brosk in a little while, Dino, which you're going to stick around for. But that was a pretty good game.
It was, and I'm really pleased for Broski. You know, I know the boy quite well through Terry McFlynn.
And a fancy dress party.
And a fancy dress party, yeah. But I think from Broski's point of view, there was a big worry with that hamstring, and, you know, it did come almost off the bone, and there was a lot of talk that, you know, will he get back? There was a lot of time he was spending in Melbourne with specialists down here. But he's back, and he's quick as ever. I mean, the finish was unbelievable. It was a great goal. But Sydney were impressive. I mean, for me, Perth looked like they were behind in their pre-season schedule. They didn't look anywhere near as fit and as sharp as Sydney did. And as I said, like I went to their camp a couple of weeks ago, and they were in really good nick. So
well, there's been a lot said about the squad that Perth has assembled, and we've talked about it a lot
on the
Box to the Box,
yep.
Yeah, in terms of the people they signed. They seem to get out of the blocks quickly with their signings, but Sydney's just been accumulating their squad, and it's not really been until the last 2 weeks when things have sort of fallen into place. And Sydney's squad looks really deep.
It does. Well, obviously,
and impressive
the
as
new
well.
Addition obviously is Bobo, but you know, for me, the biggest signing for them is that Alex Wilkinson. You know, and it'd be interesting to see what Broski talks about. You know, and how valued he is at the club. But he just brings a lot to the table. You saw what he did when he came to Melbourne City last year at the tail end of the season, and he's a massive get for them.
And the other one to talk about is obviously Edgeworth Eagles. We never expected them really to compete with Western Sydney. We got a cricket score for the first time in the FFA Cup in a little while. 5 goals Western Sydney put through.
But a nice goal from Edgeworth, and sir, to Mr. McBreen. He hasn't lost anything.
41 years of age.
He was great. He led the line.
Magic Park.
He led the line really, really well. Chased things down. The finish was great. He got a lovely little bobble, just popped up for him, so he half volleyed it. But Western Wanderers were very, very good. They were very professional, very difficult to play against, and I think they've not lost too much either from last season. You know, they'll be right at the pointy end in the A-League once it starts again.
Absolutely. If we just get quickly through the quarterfinals, Melbourne City and Western Sydney, that'll be interesting for Melbourne fans to get their first look at Tim Cahill. Canberra Olympic and Green Gully Cavaliers. Green Gully will be licking their lips with anticipation, I'm sure. They, on paper... Would suggest that they could get a semi-final. Bentley Greens and Melbourne Victory, we talked about, and Blacktown City, the Demons, up against Sydney FC. As Rob says, the Fibros versus the Silver Tails.
Exactly, mate. Roy Masters style, and nod to the great rugby league coach. The one that we're all looking at, though, clearly, is the debut of Timmy Cahill at Amy Park is where it ought to be played. We would think we're not going to go up to the northern suburbs and play in the La Trobe University training ground up there. But mate, they need a big lead into this. They need a big setup for the game, and they need a big crowd.
They do. I mean, we all know the value that we think Tim Cahill's going to bring to the table, but it's bums on seats for me. It's the one thing that's been missing from the City Group. And if they can get that right, and then all of a sudden it's a great atmosphere and Tim's playing well and four in a rolly, he's doing all his normal magic, and they're winning games. Who knows? It could be a really, really big rivalry.
And it couldn't be a better club than the Wanderers. I mean, obviously a derby against the Victory would be a great matchup. But, you know, the Wanderers, their crowd will travel. They'll bring some colour to the stadium, and there'll be some noise.
And look, Wanderers are a good side. We've seen that in that pre-season. Well, sorry, the FFA Cup, and their pre-season seems to have been going well with some of their new additions. So I think it's going to be a strong Western Sydney Wanderers, and I think it'll be a great game to go to.
Okay, Dino, what about we got some of the other transfer news. Brett Holman being signed by Brisbane Roar. We did speak with off the top of the show with Mark a little bit about this, but your view of that, I mean, my view was that's a great signing considering the off-field stuff at Brisbane, but he's going to add a little bit of depth and class to Brisbane Roar squad.
Yeah, look, I think when we went to the World Cup, where was it? South Africa. He was, for me, the best player.
Can't believe you've forgotten.
He was I'll never forget that. But he was, for me, Australia's best player. So I think if he comes anywhere near that type of form, Brisbane's got an unbelievable signing. And it'd be interesting to see how he settles back into, you know, life back here in Australia and playing in the A-League.
Dino, the other interesting signing was the Slippery Fish. We thought we had lost him to the A-League because he was heading off to Malaysia, I think. But he's back. Adelaide United have signed Enrique.
Yeah, we know what he's about, super sub. And obviously, he'll be hoping he's not going to be super sub. He's going to be actually coming in to start week in, week out. And I think Adelaide are getting a bit active towards the end of the transfer window. So I think Adelaide will be strong again.
Well done, Dino. Great wrap. Next up, a real treat. Sydney FC's Alex Brosk.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
The Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
And after 239 senior games and 21 Socceroos caps, we wondered whether injury might have called an untimely end to the career of an A-League favourite, but he proved his fitness and returned with an extra time FFA Cup goal for the Sky Blues. Welcome to Box for the first time, Alex Brosk.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Yeah, really good, Alex. Mate, thanks for coming on the show. You would have been worried for a little while that hamstring was going to bring you undone, mate.
Yeah, I was worried for a long while, actually. You know, it's sort of I had a recurrence of it a few times in the middle of last season. So, yeah, there's a lot of work sort of put into it. Obviously, I had to have surgery as well, which is never a nice thing. But in order to help it and to sort of get it back, I knew it was what I had to do. And it's been a good 5-6 months getting it back to where I need it to be. And you know, I'm not out of it just yet. I've still a long way to go, but we do have another 5 weeks to go. In pre-season to get it right.
But there's only one way to test it out, mate, and that's on the pitch and to score a goal, mate. You must have been nervous before, but relieved and delighted afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I played in a friendly match against Brisbane a couple of weeks ago in a Gold Coast camp that we had and got through that one. It was only, you know, 25 minutes, but it was exactly that, just to get back out on the pitch again, feel good, feel comfortable, and you know, more importantly, try and get through it. So, you know, to come on in this game, in an important game, there's always a bit more pressure, a bit more feeling in it. So to get through that one as well, and like you said, to end up scoring a goal and helping the team as well, it's you know, nice to know that you know, in some way I'm back.
Broski, Dean here. I was up in the Gold Coast. I spent a couple of days up there in your camp and watching it from the sidelines through the invite through Tal. You looked in really good nick there, so I'm not surprised that even when we watched in the games, you know, the inter-club games. And moving through all the drills that I was watching, you looked in really tip-top form and looking sharp. So again, I watched the game on the television, and it was a great finish.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it has been a while. I probably could have played maybe a couple of weeks ago in some games, but I've been held back, and I think rightly so as well, with everything that I've sort of been through. So, you know, it just made sure with the physio and the coaching staff that when I did take the pitch, I was 100% ready to go. So, you know, I guess what you saw at training up in the Gold Coast was probably just a keen player returning after a good 5 months. I was, you know, buzzing around, chasing everything and feeling good again about even just joining the team. So I'm glad it's been able to sort of, you know, translate out onto the field in a game situation as well, because like you said, it is the perfect place to test it and see how you'll go.
Alex, you mentioned in your press release when you decided to re-sign again that there's been so many new players added to the squad, and it's a pretty impressive squad on paper. I know all Sydney FC fans are going to love to get some early insight on Bobo. He's obviously arrived at the club and obviously been in training with you. What can you tell us about Bobo? First of all, what's he like when you first met him, and what's he like on the training pitch?
Well, for me personally, I mean, he you know, he's probably a typical sort of Brazilian where, you know, you see him at training and you know, he sort of floats about and you know, doesn't have the same, I guess, you know, aggressiveness and as what we have in just as normal in Australia. So you don't notice it too much in training, but it's little things at the moment that you know, he's obviously trying to get himself, you know, fit and understanding the culture and everything that comes with, you know, playing in another country. But the thing that I notice about him are how good he is around the box, how good he is in his finishing. To be honest, when he came on the other day, he does have a good work rate. I've spoken to a mate of mine in Brazil who tells me what sort of player he is as well. So I know that, you know, it's probably the normal Brazilian coming out in him at the moment, just taking things a little bit easier, trying to find his feet. But when he does, he's got a great eye for goal. I've noticed that already in training. He likes to turn around the box and shoot, you know, without thinking, which, you know, is something that we've probably missed in the past year or two. So to have someone like him with his finishing skills, and then also I think with the work rate that he will, you know, show in games, I think it's very exciting, and I'm very excited to have him there as well.
Well, he's got a huge pedigree. I mean, he's played at a big club, Grêmio. I mean, we're all interested to see when he settles into the environment in Sydney, how he goes for you guys. I think the other player that everyone's really excited about, and not just Sydney FC fans, because at various times in Bernie Abini's career, he's been in Socceroos' frame as well, but that horrific broken leg that he had in Europe, he's now back with Sydney FC. How's he going, and what can you tell us about his progress?
Yeah, he's going great. I mean, considering, like you said, what he went through with a broken leg and where he, I guess not the mistreatment that he had over in Belgium, but I think if you're a young kid going over there and in your first week you break down with a big injury like that, it's very easy to get sort of cast aside and forgotten about a little bit. So the physio and treatment he's been getting here has been absolutely excellent. You can see it in the way he's come on. So he's flying up and down the pitch at the moment, just doing straight line stuff, but you know, he's all on track to be ready to start the season, which, like you said, for someone like him coming back from an injury like that is great, because, you know, I think at some point he was even told he may not play football again. So for a kid that age, it's horrendous news to receive. So to see him flying up and down the pitch again in you know, especially in our colours, is great.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to Sydney FC veteran and favourite son, Alex Brosk. Now, mate, you're a three-time player of the year with the Sky Blues. Naturally, the Sky Blues, a nod to your heritage of the great footballing nation of Uruguay, who play in the same colours, mate. Slightly different environment in the eastern suburbs of Sydney where the club is headquartered, mate. Tell us about the reflections on last season and Arnie and the boys' expectations on the year to come. Last year really was a disappointing season apart from the Asian Cup tilt. What's the environment, the expectation going into the 2016-17 season?
Yeah, the expectation after last season is to do a lot more. I think Arnie's first season was great and everything worked out well and we made a grand final and it was, a historic season in a lot of ways for us. So I think we probably tried to ride that wave into the second season, with a bigger squad. And it just, for whatever reason, I think last season probably marked, or the first season marked a few things that we needed to probably look at within the club and within the playing squad. But, look, I really feel like, it was probably a season, as bad as it is, that we probably needed to have just to shake a few things up, around the place. And I think Arnie, since he's come in, has been, very set in his ways on developing a certain way for the club, a certain style of football. And I feel like, definitely this year with the players he's recruited as well, that we're definitely back on that path. I can feel it within the pre-season. I can feel the hunger within the players. And that's always there in every sport. So every player will tell you the same thing. But, having been around as long as I have, I do sort of get a good feel for players and training and how the season will go. So I'm genuinely excited about how, the potential anyway that this squad has. And I think we're on the right path to going a long way to, being back where we were 2 years ago and where Sydney FC should be. I think it's definitely the biggest club in Australia and we have to be top two or three every year. It can't be good enough to make the grand final 1 year and then not make the semis or the playoffs the following season. So I feel like we're on the right path and Arnie's done a lot to correct the wrongs of last year in a lot of ways. So like I said, genuinely excited with the players that are coming for this upcoming season.
Broski, just a couple of things. I was really impressed, not only with obviously Arnie's sessions and the message he was putting across, but also the backroom staff that they've assembled there around him. Look, a really, really tight-knit group. And obviously, it's not always just about the manager, it's always about the staff behind them. So if you can just touch on that and also those new signings you've just alerted us to, other than Bobo, who's impressed you?
Yeah, well, like you said, I think Arnie, he's very smart. He knows what, how to get the best out of people and that includes himself, and he knows that he needs a good team around him. And, people like Andrew Clark and John Crawley, he's worked with them for a lot of years. So, the trust that you get within people that you've worked with for so long, you can't sort of buy that sort of experience and that help around you. So, they've been great. And I think that have brought in, Josh Young to the midfield. I think he's been good, and Milos Dimitrovic has had a few just injury hiccups throughout pre-season, but he's now back. But it will be interesting to see how that comes along with someone like Josh, who's been flying, and you saw him the other night in Perth as well, how good he's been going. So I think he's probably a real standout for me. But at the same time, I think someone like Alex Wilkinson, I think the experience that he brings to our back line, I've heard, Seb Ryle and Matty German talking about how good or how much of an impact he has. It's the little things that he does that probably go unnoticed.
Of course.
To the normal people watching or people from the outside, but the experience that he has and the help that he can especially have for those two guys, I think we'll really see, especially someone like Matty German, who, won our Player of the Year last year and had such a good year. I think he's got room to go even to another level. And for someone like Seb Ryle, who's been playing the game for so long and got, who knows how many appearances for the club and for A-League clubs in general, to be saying that about Wilco, I think shows as well how important he'll be.
Hey, Alex, mate, thank you so much. We could talk to you for ages. We were really disappointed in here when we thought we weren't going to see you go around one more time, but we're equally pumped that you've come through the injury and we're going to see you run around for Sydney FC again. We'll have you back on the show again during the season, hopefully telling us some good news from the eastern suburbs of Sydney.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thanks a lot, guys.
No worries, Alex. Stick around next hour. Australian football legend and newly minted Central Coast Mariners coach Paul Okon and Dino returns with a look at everything that's going on in Europe.
Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
Absolutely fantastic!
Welcome back to Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport, streaming on all sorts of digital environments. And remember, if you missed a show last week or the week before, you can jump on our website, boxtoboxnts.com.au, to hear every single previous episode as a podcast loaded up there. Now, we're going to get into second edition football news shortly before we talk to Paul Okon about his new appointment as Central Coast Mariners coach and Dino back talking Europe. But first up with second edition news, Marco, it's you again.
Now, as you touched on there, Rob, we're speaking to Paul Okon this hour. He has come into the role, and a fan favourite of the club, a stalwart of the club, John Hutchison, has been given the flick on Paolo's first day on the job. Mm. Hutchison has been with the Mariners as both a player and coach since the club's inception and was touted as a future head coach, but Okon moved swiftly to exit him from the club.
But in a feisty conversation off air, you did make that remark that if it had been some sort of no-name without any power, they would have been told, here you go, here's your coaching setup, here's your players, just do your best. But they wanted their man, and their man put a line in the sand and said, okay, I'll come, but it's got to be my way. Well, so a new manager's got to flex some muscle, doesn't he?
All I'd say is, as our great friend Dean Hennessy would say, to be fair, their chairman came out in the media, basically because a lot of the media were sort of putting pressure back on the Mariners, going, who would want this job? Because you've got a playing list already in place, and a pretty ordinary one, I might add, and your coaching staff's already in place. And he basically said, well, if you don't want the job with what we've got, with our players, with our coaches, you can jog on. Then they appoint someone who then they give the great man Hutch, who is the heart, the beating heart and soul of a club that is on life support, they give him the flick.
Oh, it happens all the time, mate. Look at the AFL, mate, Justin Lepich getting the Tijuana, before him, Michael Voss, mate. It's the way it goes.
It is. Michael, thoughts on that one?
Oh, look, I think it's a great appointment. Paolo, as he's known around the traps, will obviously put everything into it. I think it's a vote of confidence for the A-League, and I'm really interested to see how he goes, because he has one hell of a hurdle to overcome, which is what you said, the lack of resources.
I think he might bring in a few Belgian nationals with his dual citizenship.
He could,
That'd be handy. He could bring one or two of those types over there. They'd be improving pretty quickly.
Now, this is a FIFA corruption story that I'm really a bit disappointed in. But anyway, Swiss prosecutors...
Not that FIFA have got a corruption story rolling again.
No, I'll get to my point. Swiss prosecutors have told the BBC they are investigating German football legend Franz Beckenbauer as part of a corruption probe. In March, football's world governing body, FIFA, began looking into six men for their part in Germany winning the rights to host the 2006 World Cup. Swiss prosecutors now say they've launched their own investigations linked to that of FIFA, Mr. Beckenbauer, who headed bloody hell, Germans.
Der Kaiser.
Yeah, look, he's already he did get mentioned when the whole storm blew up with Sepp Blatter. I don't know if I'm just an absolute got my head in the sand, Michael. I just always thought France was one of the good ones, and Germany getting the World Cup in 2006, you know, I mean...
They were South Africa by one vote, didn't they?
They did.
Now, I've been to three of them in a row. I've been to three in a row, luckily enough, with the Green and Gold Army, and Germany was far and away the best one.
Yeah.
Like, as good as Brazil was, South Africa, they huffed and they puffed. They did as good as they could with what they had. But, mate, that World Cup, in my mind, and look, we're probably biased too because it was the first time in 32 years.
Australia did well.
We should have knocked off the Italians to get to the
It does
the
make a difference when the team
be Grosso.
It does.
Look, what can you say?
Mark, how can you say that? We've been knocking around the FIFA environment for a long time, and there's lots of discussion about the fact that his vote was bought, and if he was the only vote...
Didn't he vote for us
that's
last
correct.
Time round?
Yeah. That's correct. Oh, so, look, you know...
How was that Sepp?
I can't believe you're surprised about
Sepp
that.
Said he voted for everybody, didn't he? Didn't he make some remark about his daughter not letting him back in his house if he didn't vote for Australia?
That's right. No, but, Mark, are you seriously surprised about
that? It's the Kaiser!
Yeah, I know. It's just disappointing. The fall from grace of a Titan when you see. But you look at Sebastian Coe, he's embarrassed himself with athletics, international athletics, and all the carry on going on with Russia, etc.
It's not an excuse for any corruption or mismanagement.
Mate, agreed, but it's just shattering to see somebody who wears the cloak of invincibility, you know, the World Cup winning captain.
Well, it's an investigation at this stage, but I'm just surprised.
We will point that out, yes.
I'm surprised that Mark is allegedly surprised.
I'm not surprised, but I'm just upset. Did I say surprised? I'm just upset. Because despite having the Dutch surname, de Keyser, he's a great man. Anyway, Premier League clubs have spent more than £155 million on transfer deadline day this week, and the outlay reached over the whole window, £1.165 billion. Teams already spent a combined just over £1 billion as of 8:30 on Wednesday, 8:30 British time. BST, I thought it was GMT. They've changed that, have they? Shattering last year's
Well, remember,
record.
They left the EU, so they just do whatever they
like. Oh, that's right. They've Brexited, so they're not Greenwich Mean Time anymore. Anyway, they smashed last year's record of £870 million, so an extra £100 million over the top. 13, this is what's interesting, Michael. 13 top flight clubs broke their own transfer records.
Well, there's more. They've got more money because of the TV rights, right?
Well, we'll touch on that later. Well, in fact, right now, but also in the context of Barcelona. They're having a bit of a bitch and a moan about all that. But the 20 clubs in the Premier League have benefited from that £5.1 billion TV deal, which came into effect this season. And that's what's interesting. We spoke in the first hour with
Jack Wilshere.
That's the one going to Bournemouth. All these clubs now in England can compete with all but the biggest clubs on the European stage.
And the smaller clubs, as we saw with Leicester City, at least. Admittedly, they had a little bit of cachet when Arsenal came hunting Jamie Vardy, but they could say, hey, Jamie, come back and talk to us, mate. We do have the dough. And Jamie thinks, hang on, well, they got the money. I'm a legend there already. They play the style I like. Arsenal are not necessarily going to change their game style around me. You know, I'll stay where I am. So good for the smaller clubs, good for the future of the smaller clubs. But what we want to really see in the international game is the same effect ripple through competitions like League One and La Liga and Serie A and all those sorts of comps where, you know, the usual suspects tend to win every year.
Now, look, a bit of old news became new news again this week. Hope Solo's reaction to the news. This is the US goalkeeper. Absolutely zero hope. The news that she'd been suspended for 6 months and her contract terminated by the US Soccer Federation in the wake of calling the Swedish team a bunch of what?
Cowards.
After the US women's national team was eliminated from the Rio Olympics has been released this week. Let's have a listen.
Oh, Six months suspension, no pay. Terminated contract. Effective immediately. Terminated contract. Not just a suspension.
How can they do both?
It's both. 17 f***ing years and it's over.
What a lot. Have you seen that footage?
Yeah, you sent it through.
Her husband is kind of, you can tell he's like, you can tell he's like trying to placate her, going, oh, geez, how can they do that? But you can tell he's like, just suck it up, princess. Like,
I don't know that blip was inserted correctly. 17 in years.
Oh, my God, Michael, what's she going to do now? Her contract's been terminated after 17 years.
Go on a reality TV show with Ryan Lochte. That's where you go.
This is hard. I'm going to say, as much as I'm
You love Hope Solo.
I don't love it, I'll tell you what. But it's, look, 6 months suspension for what she did. I know we discussed it last week. The more I think about it.
She was out of order, mate.
She was out of order. You get suspended for 6 months, you give her a $10,000 fine.
Babe, look, it's one of those swords of Damocles that was hanging over her head with a slender thread holding it on.
And a sword of what?
Yeah, she chopped it off and it cut her own head off, mate. That's what happened. You know exactly what I'm talking
about. What's a sword of Damocles?
Damocles. Type it into Google if you don't know.
Click Google. Exactly. Anyway, Rob, you got something for me for Father's
Day?
Yeah,
I do. Well, you know, you're...
It's my first Father's Day.
Well, you see, here I am trying to roll into this line about it being your first Father's Day.
All I want for Father's Day is more than an hour and a half of continuous sleep.
You look a bit scruffy today, too.
You reckon?
Well,
that's
what happens.
How many hours did you sleep last night, Michael?
Oh, I have older children, so
yes. Answer the question.
5 hours sleep.
Oh, five, okay. Three and a half.
Well, you're not going to get more than an hour and a half sleep at Chemist Warehouse, but then you would be a dad that's hard to buy for. I know that. There's just no question. If there was hard to buy for dads... there'd be a picture of you in the
Star Wars figure from Toys R Us, mate. I'm easy.
Now, you've probably got the socks, the shirts, the tools, the shopping vouchers.
He has no tools.
I
think his wife's got a few tools, but he has no tools.
He might be one, but he doesn't have any.
I am, as my wife calls me, a girly man.
Okay.
Correct.
Well, it's Father's Day
this Sunday.
He's got
a few magazines.
and Chemist Warehouse have got some great cologne offers now. Mate, Calvin Klein CK1 or CKBE large sizes, just $26.99. What do you reckon about the Perry Ellis Pour Homme or Citron large sizes for only $39.99? I think we talked about the Dolce & Gabbana.
We'd be rolling that way
last week.
Yeah, they have some fragrances, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. They got the lot. The light blue for $59.99, $125. I'm looking for something like
the... But they've got the one that Mark wants.
What, the
Jean-Paul
Old Spice?
Gaultier, I told you last week.
Yeah, you
they
did.
They do have it there. You know what's interesting with this? And this is, Chemist Warehouse have a million of them.
Mm.
Why do chemists have fragrances? It's interesting, isn't it?
It is interesting.
What happened in our history where they said we're going to stock medicine and cologne?
There's probably one or two other items in there that you would question as to whether they were the natural home of a pharmacy. But then again, you might say the same thing about Woolworths or Coles or your local IGA, maybe even Costco.
Don't talk
what
about
are
them.
They doing
don't sponsor us. Don't talk about them.
Yeah, that's all right. But Gucci Guilty, Aramis, the lot. Head into Chemist Warehouse. If you're looking for dad, it's the default position for any son or daughter who is heading over to mum or dad's place on Sunday. I bought nothing. Chemist Warehouse is open. Get in there and get there.
Last resort.
Or the first
and
resort.
And they're open late. That's
organized.
A good thing.
No, but that's the thing. They're always available for you when you need them, whether you're organized or whether you're not organized. That's my point for Father's Day shopping. Lowest prices guaranteed at, gentlemen,
Chemist Warehouse.
All right, guys. So is that up for you, mate, for second edition news?
Because we've
got
a
great chat coming up after the break with Paul Ocon. Is it the poison chalice at Central Coast Mariners? We're going to ask him after the break.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box. Paul Ocon captained his country in the green and gold, wore the colours at the Olympics in Barcelona and enjoyed a decorated career in Europe. He's earned his stripes as a coach since beginning his managerial career with a stint with Apia in 2008 and now has the mighty task of rejuvenating the Central Coast Mariners in the A-League. Welcome to Box, Paul.
Good morning.
Good morning to you as well. Mate, tell us a little bit about the backstory of when the interest first came your way from the Central Coast Mariners. We heard a lot of names come up, and then to many people who follow the game, Ray Gatt from the Australian broke a story that you were just about to be signed up. So could you give us a little bit of the backstory as to how this interest came about for you with the job?
Obviously, since I finished playing back in 2007, I made a decision to to go into coaching, and that was the career path that I wanted, but I never actually set a time as to when I wanted to coach in the A-League. I wanted to make sure that, if the opportunity came and it was something that interested me, that I was ready as a coach to do it. And it was a couple of weeks ago, and it was a pleasant surprise because I was actually preparing the young Socceroos in a camp for qualifiers that they have coming up soon in October. So it was something that I didn't expect, but obviously with the ambitions I have as a coach, I guess it was an opportunity that I wasn't going to let slip past me.
Paolo, there's been a lot of media discussion, a lot of dialogue amongst fans about the state of the Mariners, in particular the strategic direction that Peter Storey and that administration has taken the club. There's been a lot of local fallout. How much was that a consideration for you in the job? And just what is your, looking from the outside in, as you probably were as a, following the A-League to now, going through a process to learn about all of that. What was your view of it? And what can you tell us about the state of the club from its administrative perspective and its connection with the fans and where it needs to go from here?
Yeah, well, look, I was, a spectator last year, like many, looking from the outside. So, to actually then sit down with the club and go through things and listen to what they had to say and the direction they wanted to go. And to be honest, it's probably not too far from how I see it. And like I said, and I think everyone knows, I've been working in youth development for a number of years now with our junior national teams. And the Mariners really see themselves as a club that want to give opportunities to young players. So I guess that was one thing that really interested me in the job. And there are those external factors, and
I think the Mariners last year were one of the only clubs to actually turn a profit. They have a philosophy at the moment where they don't want to spend more than what they have. They want to keep the club clean sailing, and I understand it, and I'm happy to continue to work with young players and hopefully find and develop some new ones.
Paolo, it's Dean Hennessy here. Just a quick question. Obviously, when you came into the job, it was of interest. Obviously, John Hutchinson departed. I know coaches and managers do want to bring their own staff. Can you just tell us a little bit about how that was done, and also who is your backroom staff and who you brought with you?
I haven't brought anyone other than an assistant coach, and it's something that it's a little bit sensitive, obviously, because Hutch is a club legend, and I think he only played for one A-League club. So, when I had a look at it, I just felt that the club needed a new change, a new direction. So I decided to bring in Ivan Jolik as my assistant coach, who's had 2 years' experience working with Melbourne City, who I think is a very, very big club in the A-League. And, we complement each other. We have the same philosophy on the game. And I just felt that Ivan's experience would be not only what I needed, but I think the playing group and the whole club needed. If we're going to move in a new direction.
Of course. No, look, I totally understand that. I mean, I know Ivan pretty well as well, obviously being Melbourne-based, and he brings a lot to the table, and I can understand why you wanted to bring someone that you're going to share the same, I suppose, direction and thought process about how you want to play as a team. And how do you see the squad at the moment? You know, like, obviously you've inherited this squad. Is there some more signings to come in? Have you identified some areas you want to improve?
Yeah, well, we've only had, I think, three training sessions. So up till now, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the hunger and the desire and the motivation of the players. I think at the end of the year, we have up to 19 players off contract. So if that's not motivation for the players between now and the end of the season to show that, A, they want to play A-League, and B, they want to play for the Mariners. And as we move along, we'll have a look at it. And I think every coach will say that, their responsibility is to try and continually strengthen the squad to make it as competitive as possible, and that's exactly what we'll do.
This is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. We're talking to newly crowned Central Coast Mariners coach Paul O'Conn. Now, Paul, there's a lot of local rivalry up there. Laurie McKinnon's just moved over to the Newcastle Jets. Whilst your main job is obviously to get the club firing back up on the park, you also know the importance of that role off the park in rejuvenating the local interest in the game. Is that at all part of the discussion, or do you see it that if you perform on the park, the rest will follow?
Yeah, well, look, it was part of the discussion, and then the club wanted to make sure I was aware of how important the team is to the community, and obviously how important the community is to the team. And we talk about derbies, and I've played in those derbies between the Mariners and Newcastle, and it's a great day. It's actually a great week for the supporters leading up to it, and obviously I think throughout the A-League those derbies are very important. But for us, given I don't really like or want to talk about what happened last year, because football doesn't let you stand still, and I wasn't a part of that. But I honestly believe that with the brand of football that we hope to play, that our loyal supporters who were there last year when we weren't where we were a little bit disappointing, we want to give them something to say. Saturday afternoon there's a game at Central Coast Stadium. We're going because we know what we're going to get. We're going to get an exciting brand of football. On the flip side, for the people who are unsure as to what they're going to get, well, they're going to find out very quickly, and we want to drag them out of their homes on a Saturday afternoon or a Saturday down to the stadium to say, yeah, we're going to support you guys.
Mm-hmm. Now, awesome, Paolo. We were saying off air that you've got a few connections overseas, and mm-hmm. one of the things, I know you don't want to look at last year, but one of the things last year that was impactful was the marquee signing of Luis Garcia. So are you able to, convince Peter Story to maybe, get his wallet out and see who, what other big names you can pull your way? Is that going to be part of your your plans in the future? Is there an opportunity to get some budget for a marquee player?
Maybe from Belgium.
Could be from Belgium.
Well, as we speak, Peter's talking to Leo Messi, so he should be allowed to be. look, I'm
that text regime stop that.
Yeah, look, I'd be delighted to have a marquee, to have, you know, another Luis Garcia or like a big name that's going to give something to the A-League and obviously to the team. But look, right now it's not something that I'm thinking about. I really want to give the opportunity to the boys that are there. First of all, try and improve them, get them playing the playing style that we want. And then again, if there's that opportunity in that window, I think that's a discussion for Peter Story and Mike Charlesworth to decide on.
Paulo, it's Dean again. Just a quick one. When you walk into a new job, like obviously that you have now, when you first walk in and think, what are the first things I have to do? Because I think for especially young coaches coming into the game, you most probably can get a bit daunted with the amount of things, or well, how many things do I need to address first? So when you walked in the door, what was the first thing you thought, what do I need to do first?
Well, the first thing is to meet the players.
Yeah, of course. that's not a bad introduction, is it?
Yeah, of course. No, meet them and just explain to them and go through what my expectations are and the way we want to move forward and hopefully get that point across as quickly as possible, because in 4 weeks' time we have our first game away to Perth Glory. So it's just we have to start working as soon as possible and as hard as possible. There is no secret. I don't think there's a secret.
No.
It's football. I ask for cones. I ask for balls. I ask for poles.
Yeah.
That's all I need. That's all I need now, just to get the ball rolling.
Hey Paul, good luck to you, mate. We're
really excited. It's great for a young Australian coach. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully, this is the first step in a long and lustrous managerial career, which will be every bit as glorious as your playing one.
Thanks, guys. Look, I hope that you blokes become your second team becomes the Mariners. Okay.
Awesome.
Good on you. Next up, Dino with his Euro wrap.
Box to box.
The Chemist Warehouse,
home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. There's plenty going on in Europe. Dean Hennessy's back to talk to us about it, Dino.
Yes, it's the great thing about Europe, as we all know, there's always news. It's not only on the hour, it's on the minute. It's there's all sorts. I mean,
especially when the transfer window is in countdown mode.
Well, the transfer window, I mean, again, England dominated it, you know, just over $1 billion. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, we've talked about that already. I mean, the Jack Wilshere one is the one that I'm particularly fascinated in. I would just love to see that young man do something special with Bournemouth, because Bournemouth's just a great story. The whole
story.
Yeah. We've got Brad Smith over there. They're already hanging around the sort of drop zone and they need something. So they've rolled the dice and they've hoped. They've got the money. They've seen off the Italian clubs. He's turned up now. He's got to bring his A package.
Yeah, look, it is. And I mean, look, we talked about him like last season, you know, with Eddie Howe there. He's done such a fabulous job. He's such a good manager. You know, he was linked with the England job before Sam Allardyce got the job, and most probably rightly so. But I think he's a future England manager. I think, again, he's got to get some runs on the ball, but he's already got in his young career now as a manager some runs on the ball. But I think someone like Jack Wilshere is desperate now to actually play week in, week out and prove how good a footballer he can be.
Well, it's interesting you mention Eddie Howe, because he was mentioned in dispatches for the England job. So one minute he's almost the England manager.
That's what Dean said. He thinks he'll be the next one.
But that's the point there, that he's now going to be fighting a relegation battle to keep the side up.
Look, it's too early for relegation battle talk. I mean, it's one win and then all of a sudden you most probably jump, I don't know, four, five,
right,
six places.
Especially
so I think it's most probably a third of the season you most probably go, hold on, someone's in real trouble now and they've got to dig it out. I mean, then again, you only have to look at Sam Allardyce and what he did with Sunderland, and they were in deep, deep trouble.
Yeah, well, we had them out.
And they were gone, you know, gone with about 10 games to go, but they came back.
Dean, interestingly, the national team goalkeeper, Joe Hart, he's exited England. Let's listen to what a former teammate of his and now BBC pundit Trevor Sinclair has to say about this, and then we'll get your views.
I think it's a good move for him, you know. I think Manchester City wouldn't have wanted to sell Joe or loan Joe to a team that's in competition. for the league title and top four. So I think he was limited at the clubs that he could have gone for. And if you ask me, Sunderland or go to a different culture, different country, different philosophy of learning. Italy, you know, one of the most highly regarded teams defensively in Europe, or countries in Europe. I would say for Joe, it would probably be a good shout for him to go. Torino's not the biggest club he could have gone to, but I feel they finished 11th last season in Serie A. He'll probably get a lot of practice and he'll be able to keep sharp. And, you know, I hope Sam doesn't overlook him for the national team just because he's gone abroad, because I feel a lot of other English players should do that, because it's a great experience for him.
Yeah, look, I mean, what can you say? It's an interesting move. Torino isn't most probably the most glamorous Italian club he could have gone to, but at the end of the day, he needs to be playing first-team football. And I think you always then alert yourself to how does that decision moving abroad affect his England chances. You know, he's still relatively young as a goalkeeper. I mean, he's 29, I think, now. Yeah. And if he's in and around that age, I mean, goalkeepers generally don't mature till about 27. And we all know the good ones and the ones that can, you know, injury-free can go until they're 40. So.
Well, I think, importantly, he needs to improve the way he's playing, because we all saw at the Euros, he was subpar. He wasn't at the standard that was required. So no. I think out of the fishbowl, I mean, Torino's going to have a fair bit of media around where he plays there too, but to go abroad and maybe regather some form, it could be good for him.
I think there's another angle we can look at this as well is, you know, all these boys are all multi-millionaires. Yeah. You know, money's not the issue. I mean, they most probably make it the issue at times, but it's not the issue. Yeah. But football, it can be a really short career. You know, yeah. There's many, many footballers who've been unbelievable, had short careers and really never got to play the years that they should have. And I think from Joe's, this is a wake-up call. I mean, he's got a wake-up call at a really important time of his life. And hopefully he goes over there, gets back into form. He is a good goalkeeper. He's been England's goalkeeper for a while now, and no one's been close to pushing him. Now, obviously, there's a few boys now knocking on the door and you know, obviously overtaking them, depending on who the manager is at the time. But look, I still rate Joe Hart. He had not a particularly great Euros. Was at fault for at least two of the goals that were quite blatant.
Sort of important goals as well, weren't they?
Well, they are. I mean, every goal, especially in major tournaments, you know, is the difference of that particular goal affects the result, whether it's a draw or a win, you know. So your goalkeepers are vital, and it doesn't matter what level you are, even when you're at NPL where I'm at, goalkeepers are massive because they keep you in the game.
Dean Hennessy is a multi-millionaire. He's had a glittering career at Manchester City. He's won the title. He's played for his country. And then this club from the north of Italy invites him over to play for them. He's going to bring his family over there. They're probably going to teach him how to speak a little Italian. As Edge said, he's going to be out of the fishbowl. I reckon it's a pretty easy choice to make.
Yeah, look, England is a really tough place to be when you're a footballer. You know, it can go so right for you, but as soon as you
make... The Italians are known to get a little emotional themselves. But if he does well, they'll adore him.
Well, they will. But again, I mean, most probably the best person that ever went over to Italy and did really well was Gazza. I mean, the Gascoigne story was, you know, he was loved and again, he had his moments in Italy.
And that's from an England point of view. Remember Diego Maradona at Napoli? He was a superstar there for that period of time.
It's exactly what he needs now. He needs to get his head straight and...
And again, he might throw one in the back of the net in the first game and they'll be on him forever.
And that's football, isn't it? Exactly. That's why we love it.
Have you got some more goss, Dean? We love a bit of goss.
Yeah, you and your gossip, mate. Why don't you bring the Women's Weekly in here and read that?
I suppose the goss most probably...
It'll be the Hello magazine if we're talking about England.
I think the gossip most probably is more so the transfer. Yeah. You know, the amount of money, £1.165 billion.
You like saying that.
Well, I do. And obviously, you know, we know a little bit about this space and...
Okay, stop saying we know a little bit about this space. What do you know about this space?
Well, we just do. We spent a lot of time looking at how their whole system works, and it's so unique.
Okay, tell us a bit about what you
know. The way the FA work on their rights deals is they go on a bidding system, and it's...
Blind auction, yeah.
So it's a live auction. So basically, they just sit there in a room, and as Ed says, with their feet on the desk going, well, that's going up. Yeah, that's going up. And it just keeps going up and up and up. And then eventually there's a winner, and yeah, you've got that
pure
right.
Pure market economics. There's no influence about, you know, whether there's a bigger footprint with one TV station or another. It's if you've got the money, you pay, you get it.
That's and I think we're experiencing that with the Optus deal, you know.
We are, because as
we got our box 2 weeks late, but we've got the box, yeah. Which is all good news.
Does it work?
Well, I haven't tried.
But
that just pours the money in. I mean, the rights deals that they've got now, these clubs have just got money to spend. And I was listening to a pundit in England who was saying about, you know, what would cost nowadays, you know, sorry, 2 or 3 years ago, 10 million. Now you're paying 30 for the same player or the same ilk of player. And it's just gone crazy. And, you know, if you go to, like, the older folk, like my dad, which I'm going to touch on Franz Beckenbauer, because I know Marco is going to have a little bit of a go in stoppage time on that. But the game's changed, and sometimes you wonder, has it changed for the best? You know, like my dad's 74, Beckenbauer's 70, and money was, you know, but again, it was relative. You know, my dad was a £100,000 defender, you know, and that, he was the first defender in the world to go for that. But, you know, pales in, I mean, that's petty cash now. Mm. That's happening in non-league football, you know. It's the game's just gone crazy, and sometimes I think football does spoil it. I'm not quite sure if all the footballers that we know, there seems a lot more spoilt brats in the world. Yeah. You know, Berahino comes to mind, you know, where he was almost at one stage refusing to play. I mean, what's that all about? Yeah. So
But it's just moved. Football as a sport has moved into the entertainment space, has just, I mean, we're comparing sportsmen to Hollywood superstars these days.
We are.
And you don't need all of the money. I mean, you just watch the end of a Hollywood blockbuster and look at the amount of people involved in creating one movie with one story that multiple people have to watch. We're getting multiple stories every time a sports fan turns the TV onto the Premier League or La Liga or whatever it happens to be, and you never know how it's going to end. And the superstars, the actors in this space are the players, and they're getting their money. So we're watching that evolution before our eyes, and you know, it's just going to continue to go.
Oh, look, it won't get better; it'll get worse in that space. And I think what's going to most probably break. You know, and I don't wish this on any club, but there's going to be a club that's well known, really well known, famous, has massive history in the game, and it'll go down. And now, and something will happen, and it'll only take one event to then maybe stop the landscape from continuing to grow that way. There's got to be a point eventually where it has to.
Well, we saw Rangers, you know, they had their massive tax bill, and that almost sent them under, didn't it? And, you know, they've been.
Well, it did. I mean, look, I just want to touch on, and I know Marco's going to touch on this, but Franz Beckenbauer, I mean, it was the bid in, and I think it was the one where he actually bid for Australia to get it, the only one sole vote in our disastrous bid. Is that correct? I've got the right one in the right slot. Mm. But it's sad that, you know, you got a footballer that was very, very famous, unbelievable footballer, you know, won a lot of things in the game, highly respected. Michel Platini, the same, you know, he was the European Footballer of the Year and very famous French international. But, you know, why do they get themselves in these positions? Haven't they got enough money? Don't they get paid enough to have to then do bribes and take money?
Yeah, we talked about Lionel Messi getting involved in his tax problems.
Tax problem. It's just, you know, I think it's more so who the people looking after them, who are actually giving them some advice. And you'd think with a 70-year-old man, which let's turn the clock back, what would he be, 60-something? Don't you know better now? And I think it just comes down to greed, just pure greed, or they get themselves in situations they don't want to be in. And that's sad for the game.
But also the fact that they're unaware at the time that they're operating that the rules have changed, and the rules, like sort of say a blood passport in drug testing, we can go back in time.
You know, of course.
Your actions of 10 years ago are not quarantined to 10 years ago. We can find you out, and he might have thought, well, this is the way that FIFA operates. Everybody does it. The reward
no
is
excuse,
the World
Rob.
Cup. Hey, I'm not making excuses. I'm just giving a backstory and some colour on it. So yeah, no, look, it's shameful, and it's just sad, as you say, mate, that an icon of international sport, let alone football, allegedly might be involved in this sort of carry on.
I think what we'll do is we'll just finish it off. I mean, we've had this on the show last week, but a certain Liverpool player with Mr. Klopp, he certainly, I saw in the gossip column, he's Sacco, our mate Sacco.
He's back in there,
and he's really annoyed with the manager. Now, you know, I listen to, like, people going public, like Sturridge as well, you know, going, telling the manager, well, I don't actually like playing out wide on the left publicly. What's that all about? Why don't you just sit down with the manager and say, look, Gaffer, do you not think I'm better in other positions? Have a private conversation. He'll tell you your fortune anyway, and you won't die wondering what the answer will be. But to go public, I think, again, this comes down to this perception that these individuals have of who they are. And at the end of the day, he's there to... Exactly. And they want to play a particular way. It's a high press. And does Sturridge work hard enough in a high press? Question mark. Don't know. And that's maybe why he's not in a central position.
Okay. Bit of homework for you for next week, Dino. It's the international break. We want some results and some views on some of the World Cup qualifiers, Europe style, and some of those friendlies as well, mate.
We do. I'll make sure that we're all over it. And we'll have a really good look at the whole of... And also the overnight friendlies. I mean, there were some interesting results overnight as well. So, but let's stick to the main games, which are obviously the qualifiers.
Excellent, Dino. After the break, Marco returns with Stoppage Time.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse.
Home of real brands and real savings.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Welcome back to Box on NTS News Talk Sport. Now, if you've just sort of joined us in the second hour and you missed the first bits, don't worry about it. Just jump onto boxtoboxnts.com.au. The podcast will be up there very soon and you can listen to the whole show. But you may have been with us the whole time and... You know, regretting that we're just about to wade into the final few minutes of stoppage time. Of
which Marco Van Aken's back.
He is.
Stoppage time.
It's time for a bit of news about the great man, Wayne Rooney, as Sir Alex was there, the boy Rooney, has announced that the 2018 FIFA World Cup will be his final tournament with England after he was kept on as captain by new boss Sam Allardyce. Let's hear from Shrek himself.
I've had a fantastic international career so far, played a lot of games and I've enjoyed every minute, but at some point, you know, if it's going to come to an end, whether it's 2 years, 4 years' time, but I think I'm still fairly, I'm not old, I'm 30 years of age, and come Russia, I feel that will be the time for me to, you know, say goodbye to international football, and my mind's made up.
So they've pulled the World Cup forward to next month.
To next week, is it?
He's kidding himself. Is that the worst? Is that the worst?
Is Sam Allardyce kidding himself? What's going on?
Yeah, that's embarrassing, really, isn't it? I mean, you got the Russian World Cup in 2018. Here's Wayne just battling to get a starting position, and he's announcing his retirement, sort of trying to gazump Sam's
Roy had him playing at left back at times in the Euros, didn't he?
You know, it's funny. And look, he's even, you know, I don't know if Man United will have him playing by the end of the season, let alone for England. That's it. I said that.
That just shows you where they're at, doesn't it, really?
But you know, it's funny too. We see England, for some reason, I can say this while Dino's ducked out early, as some mythical national football team, when obviously they're just a middle-of-the-road European team. And... you know, as I was saying, he's barely getting a game for Man United. You think, yeah, but hang on, Man United are a far superior unit than the English national team. So then I start thinking, put it in the context of Australia, just because our skipper, Milo Jednak, plays in the championship, you know, he still gets a game for Australia, obviously.
I don't even think Tim Cahill would say, oh, I'm going to retire. Already,
yeah, look, the 2030 World Cup's my last World Cup.
I can't imagine
I reckon he would
doing
say
that.
Well, let's just quote Willy Wonka, Vale Gene Wilder. He is the dreamer of dreams, and that's a dream he's dreaming, but I think it could end up being a nightmare.
I actually had that movie in the office yesterday.
Did you? It's a classic.
It's a freaky movie.
Who's your favourite? Violet Beauregard?
No.
Augustus Gloop. Is that right?
Yeah.
Why would you say that?
I don't know. I just plucked it out of thin air. Mike TV. Who are the others?
Mike TV's mine.
Is he really? Okay.
If you know me, I have square eyes, or in this day and age, 16-9 eyes.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, on Timmy Cahill, we have Rob, you hit me up last week saying, oh, we should speak to Timmy Cahill. I said, why not, Rob, you think?
Yeah, getting the least.
But yeah. I put the request...
That's better than my request for you to get Zinedine Zidane that time, but you didn't even try.
I must admit, I didn't even try. I didn't put the phone call.
No, you did. At least you had an excuse. You said he can't speak English, so I thought, I'll understand.
Anyway, but funnily, sure, I actually put the request through, and I said to Julius down at the city, I said, look, I know everyone's trying to talk to him, but can at least put myself on the list? And he came back and he said, yes, you are officially now on the list. You're 18th in the queue.
You told me we were 19th, so that's good.
There we go. 18, but this week we're probably popped up to about 11th or 12th. So we will actually get Tim Cahill at some stage.
Yeah, and we hopefully might even invite him in the studio, given that we broadcast from Melbourne, and we'll try our luck, roll the dice. Wouldn't that be a little coup for
it
us?
It would be. Wouldn't hold your breath on that one. Let's just try and get the great man on the phone. But, of course, we will try. Now, let's move on. A total of 19 double-headers with the A-League have been, and 17 broadcast matches headline the W League 2016-17 draw. The ninth edition of the Women's League will kick off on 5 November with a 14-round regular season before culminating in a grand final on Sunday, the 12th of February. I like this, but I want these clubs, the ones, which is most of them, that have Youth League and Women's League, W League, take it a step further. I actually spoke to Damien DeBowen about this, and he liked it. He's obviously now departed as head of A-League. Why wouldn't you, if you're Melbourne Victory and Melbourne City, pick a couple of fixtures a year? I know it's logistically challenging all the time. Pick a day where you're going to play your youth league at, say, noon. You play your women's game at 3. You play your senior team at 5 or 6. And you put on a Gosh's Paddock next door, a big football festival, put in your jumping castles, your face painting, all that rubbish as well, and make it a real day. And try and turn these A-League teams and W-League teams into actual clubs versus franchises. That's your opportunity to do that and actually build a club concept, which would be fantastic. And I know he liked the idea. Again, it's not easy to do, Michael. I know you know events. I know events. But at least once or twice a season, get it done. This is a stepping stone to that.
It's a good idea, Mark.
Well, what I'm loving about that is, look, we expected it, though, guys, that the Matildas didn't do what we expected in Rio, but they sort of became household names for a little while. And a lot of those names that people were unaware of are now in the public spotlight. Now, people within the football community owe it to the game. And if they want to pay more than lip service to supporting the women's game, they've got to get there a little bit earlier and watch the women's game and watch some of these great names go about their business. Then we'll see the W League take the next step.
Well, what's interesting, for the first time, a W League match we played straight after an A League game, with Perth Glory and Western Sydney Wanderers to do battle in the opening round of the league for the women's at NOB Stadium after the Round 5 A-League match. So it's interesting having it after versus a curtain raiser. I guess you could argue that's actually that the A-League game's the curtain raiser, Rob.
Now, it would be, but I just wanted to point out to you that it's probably a little bit early for you to be watching Play School with Luca, but one of the areas...
Will he go to sleep while watching it?
Yeah, possibly, but...
Let's get it on. Look,
Play School celebrated their 50th anniversary this year, and they had a whole range of different celebrities come back to do... songs like, The Wheels on the Bus, etc. One of the celebrities they had were the Matildas. They came on and sang, If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands. If You're Happy and You Know It, Kick a Ball.
Some wind-up?
No, it's not a wind-up, it's true. So that means they're educating them very young, very clever, the only Australian sporting organisation who got him with Play School. John came back, Don was back, Benita was there, and the Matildas were there.
There we go. Good stuff.
Check it out. Type it into Google. Play School celebrity covers. And a little shout out to my Alexander, who loves it.
He
doesn't know who the Matildas are, but he likes their efforts with If You're Happy and You Know It.
Now, I touched on this earlier in the show. Barcelona are concerned. Poor old Barcelona. Are concerned that the Premier League's club's spending power is leaving the rest of Europe behind and have suggested UEFA's financial fair play regulations should be adapted to account for the influx of money into English football. Of course, we touched on those astronomical figures being spent in the transfer window. We said the UK was just over 1.1 billion pounds. La Liga was only 488 million euros. We're not comparing apples with apples there, but it's a lot less, put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, poor old Barca.
With
100,000 members and their...
Crying core.
To be fair, they've only got a number of Barca fans, I might add, so don't get upset out there, people, but you've only got three of the best six attacking players in the world in the one team. It's a hard life for those Barca fans, isn't it?
It's a hard life. It's a hard life.
You've won the league, seven or eight?
Richard Scudamore and his broadcast team sit back with their feet on the desk, smoking cigars about how
even
much money.
Even if no one in Australia can see it, yep.
Keep going. As I said, they don't care. They get the money, that's all that matters.
They'll care when kids are walking around in Bundesliga shirts in 5 years' time in Australia. They will, Rob.
All right, Marco, that's... Stoppage time
Give
for
me
you,
the wine
mate. Up. Yeah, we might as well. It's Father's Day coming up soon. We're all going to enjoy our fragrances from Chemist Warehouse.
Good shift, Marco.
Generosity of our families.
Solid.
Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, to the first father of the studio, Mark Van Aken, your very first one. I hope you get looked after.
Oh, he gets looked after all the time.
Just sleep. That's all I'm after.
Mel, she's a star. She's an absolute star.
The words long-suffering get put before her name very often?
Oh, yeah. They should.
Okay. To you, Edge, to Dino, to Nige. Thank you, Marco. So that's full-time on Box to Box. Join us next week when we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of... Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.